Philosophy. Descartes. Debate. The Mep Report. Mep Report. Mep Report. The awesomest discussion podcast in the history of the human species.
Oh, yeah!
Let me tell you of an interview with an old man emu. He's got a beak and feathers and things, but the poor old fella ain't got no wings. Aren't you jealous of the wedge-tailed eagle? Well, the eagle's flying round and round to keep my 2 feet firmly on the ground. Now, I can't fly, but I'm telling you, I could run the pants of a kangaroo. But he can't fly, but I'm telling you, he can run the pants of a kangaroo.
Right, in that case, welcome to the Mep Report number 163. It is March 2nd, 2020, and it is only a few weeks after our last show. So this is, if this keeps up, guys,
we're not dead.
Right, I was going to say, like, this is going to be a more like regular occurrence. Like this is moving. There's momentum, as the story says, and we're not dead. We're here. The whole team is here.
I was just referencing coronavirus. Nothing to do with
anything.
Every new episode
last time,
is
the
We're Not Dead podcast.
Your virus, I don't know.
It's true. So we're still here as of yet, although I was saying the story that I loved his graphic for 162, which I hope everyone has listened to, and if not, you should go do so, because it's just basically like Schiff looking at a picture of the coronavirus with Trump pointing at it, and then like Kobe pointing up at the coronavirus, and then like, I don't know who this is, Bregman or somebody,
Altuve
hitting a home run into the coronavirus. So it was pretty much it was everything was like,
oh yeah, coronavirus, it's almost as if Jose Altuve hit a tainted home run that cursed the world.
Well, he hit a coronavirus. Yeah, I think that's what actually happened. Is he hit a coronavirus?
There's a lot going on in that graphic, guys.
I gotta say,
analyze it for days.
Many levels.
I gotta say, the thing that really, so first of all, welcome everybody. Thank you for listening to us as always. I have to say, I wanna lead off by just, this cracked me up today. So I was doing some work, and onto MSNBC comes a press conference being held by Vice President Pence, your leader of the coronavirus task force, because the last time that Pence was involved in handling a medical, event, he was responsible for wiping out a bunch of people in Indiana for completely mishandling the HIV crisis. So clearly, this is the guy that we want. He's proven his bona fides, for fouling up things. So that's the measure of what.
Well, you know the theory on that, right?
Of what? Of
that this is the way that Trump scapegoats Pence and gets rid of him.
Yes, I heard about that, 100%. But then a bunch of videos came out today that showed people patiently, like to a toddler, trying to explain how vaccines work of Trump, and it just like, yeah, it was bad. Anyway, but the thing I wanted to focus on was they have this press conference, and they bring out this, they have, you know, Pence is in front, and they've got a czar who's the Health and Human Services guy, and they've got some other people. They got the head of the CDC. They've got Dr. Anthony Fauci, who's like the only person there who actually knows what the hell he's doing. And then they bring out this woman who I forget, I think her name is Birx or Blix or something like that, who apparently is well respected and has, you know, is a doctor obviously, and is well respected and is going to be coming in to do consultation, was appointed by Obama or whatever. And so she comes up and, you know, Pence introduces her. And so she comes up and speaks. But the thing that I was really like, she literally starts by being like, well, you know, I'm glad to be here, and I'm looking forward to, you know, working with them, you know, on behalf of the American people, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, I really want to say, you know, that the response really so far has really been excellent. I mean, like the minute I arrived on the ground, I just flew in, and she's like, the minute that I arrived on the ground, they had a laptop and a phone ready for me. And I think that really indicates sort of how out front they are of this. And I'm like, did you just say that they're out front of a problem because they got you a laptop and a phone? Like, this is the bar that we have to clear is, we got you the two most important communication devices of the 21st century as one of the people who's responsible for helping contain the coronavirus in the United States. And that that's the bar. Like, you know, guys, you did a great job.
A landline or, you know, just or was like, Zune or
you
something.
Know, they got me a type. Right, exactly. Who would use that? They got me a type.
Several diseases have been cured with just a laptop.
Phone, with a laptop, right? And a like, phone. Well, but the fact that they were talking about it is just like, you know, like they got me, you know, some, many presidents would have given me a typewriter and tin cans attached by a string. But the fact that these people had a laptop and a phone ready shows you that they are on top of it. This is outbreak control, what we've got right here. And I was like, great, great. That's, I'm glad to know that we've got a team assembled that can give you a laptop and a phone.
I have a lot of thoughts about what's going on, but I'll just say this. It's all been kind of fun and games with the presidency up until this point, where it's like he does ridiculous, stupid, heinous things, but like he hasn't had to deal with any catastrophes or crises.
He's been incredibly
fortunate.
He didn't
create himself.
Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, sure. Yeah.
And now is kind of the moment of reckoning when we really get to see front and center when we need like superior organization.
Yeah.
Like what happens when you have a leader who just, you know, goes around blaming people and inventing narratives and doing nothing but PR and spin. And that's like the extent of his quote unquote expertise.
But Russ, he's just trying to bully the virus into submission. Like he tweeted today, he had a list of top, I don't know if you saw this. The White House posted a series of top tweets praising Trump. I swear to God, this is true. Top tweets praising Trump from people like Matt Gaetz and, you know, like these other Republicans, Mark Meadows. And I'm like, top tweets. So, you know, he's just bullying the virus into submission and the virus will have to go away.
You know? I mean, as you can imagine, I have a particularly gloomy outlook on this, given our last conversation. So I'm interested to hear what you guys think about what's going on and what, you know, how you think this is progressing.
Well, I mean, I'll be curious to see what Story thinks about it also. I mean, there's, you know, there's a case in New York State. I mean, all of this is what we talked about last time. Like it was obviously going to reach the United States. It was obviously going to spread. You know, the impression that I have from, I was talking before to Story about how St. John's, my university, has suspended all academic programs on the Rome campus and brought their students are coming back home because, you know, Italy is not in a position, they can't keep students there under these circumstances.
For a second, I was like, Rome, New York, that feels like a pretty safe place to be right now.
Yeah, they're just like, Rome. They're like, no, Rome, New York is the biggest. there'll be no planes into Milan, Georgia. So there's
pretty
also
remote,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they won't be flying there. You know, like, I mean, the one I actually was, I was watching, I forget who it was, a major virologist, I think from Johns Hopkins. And one of the things that he was pointing out was that this is one scenario where, although the United States does not have the ability to just sort of lock down and keep people in places the way that China did, like in kind of this sort of extraordinary way, he said the one thing that is working in the US's favor is that because there is a lot of sort of descent. Well, two things. One, because of our ability to quickly sequence the genome of these things, that's like a huge advantage. And side note, that's based upon, of course, money that we spent a long time ago. Because if we try to do that now, it would be like, what? No, freedom, tax cuts. So, you know, again, we're continuing to benefit off of the foresight of people that, you know, 20, 30 years ago. But the second reason was that because the individual states have control over a lot of this, for example, New York State, California, and a lot of these, the likelihood is that the containment is going to be a lot better in many of these places. And not even containment, but the ability to sort of manage the sort of symptoms and what happens. The problem is that even if the fatality rate ends up being like, you know, 0.7 or 0.8, or even if it's, you know, lower than, you know, whatever is being suggested, could be, even if it was like that. The problem is not so much the illness itself as much as it is the fact that people who are severely affected by it need, you know, might need respirators and need ICU unit beds. And we have only, and I didn't know this, 95,000 beds for the entire country. And that includes like, you know, burn units and things like that. And this is the problem with having a system that is always right on the edge, because that's the way that these things can be financially viable. Because if you had more beds than you typically need, I mean, then you wouldn't earn 6 million quatludes in profit. It would be, you know, 599,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999,999, kind of the potential to sort of connect to the system. That said, though, he felt that in the end, what was going to happen was it was going to cost a lot more money than it should, that there were going to be people that would die that would not have died if this were handled in a more rational way. But that the idea of sort of societal collapse and stuff that you heard from some people who really want this to be the stand is, he said, is extremely unhelpful on the other side, not only because it creates panic, but because it's just not accurate. He said, so, but the problem is that we should, you know, they will manage, they'll manage. I think what he said was, we will manage okay, but we should have managed much better. And that's all because of sort of stupid decisions that were made leading up to this. So no amount of task forces at this point are going to help with sort of containing the spread. And the question is, will we do what we need to in terms of treatment? So, you know, I mean, like, I guess I'm glad that I'm not doing any conference travel until May. And I'm glad that, you know, personally that
I think you should you know, make sure you have cancelable tickets for your conference travel in May.
Oh yeah, well no, I'm driving to these. These are like relatively small Comic Cons, so theoretically I could just not go. I mean, if I had to, so okay. Yeah, I don't have plane tickets or anything like that anywhere.
Non-refundable tickets.
Say again, what?
Yeah, just don't buy any non-refundable tickets.
Nah, I don't have it. Yep, no, I don't have anything like that. Until actually, we don't have any flights planned anywhere, I think, all of this year so far.
I'm getting on a plane on Wednesday.
Story's going to San Antonio.
Exactly. I'm going to San Antonio, which certainly did not just declare a citywide emergency for coronavirus.
Sure. That's fine.
Or did, you know, one or the
other. It did. I hadn't even heard about San Antonio.
Yeah. The emergency is like slightly overblown because it's just like they literally can't legally quarantine anyone. Without an emergency order.
Yeah, they need to do that. Right, exactly.
Standard, probably. Yeah, yeah. It's reasonable. And they had like one of these like phantom cure cases that are very seemingly very common with this, where someone goes in with symptoms, they diagnose them with coronavirus, a couple days later they seem to be cured, they let them out, and then they come back with coronavirus,
which is you have to ask, why are they doing that? Like, why just keep them in there for? And the answer is they don't want them in the hospital long. You know, like that's why.
Well, the answer is like what? I mean, my take on this. You know, I mean, the last time I talked about like we overreact to pandemics, and it's good because that's what keeps them from getting out of control. That is still like probably my overall take.
Yeah.
But my secondary take that is, I think, becoming the more salient thing, and it's nice that like because we're in an election year. And there's actually progressive candidates in the election. People are actually talking about some of these things. But is that, like, this pandemic, if you want to look on the bright side, and I'm not saying that it's worth it because it's not worth it to kill people, but the, like, you know, once we're in this situation, it's going to expose a lot of the depraved elements of our societal structure are really really problematic for people to have to live with. For example, like food service workers who have the most control over the spread of virality are the people who are least likely to have health insurance or paid time off. And so they're going to be, you know, stuck between, do you stay home sick and starve to death, or do you infect everyone in our society? And we don't have mechanisms unless people react very nimbly, you know. And I was actually listening to, because I drove Alex up to the plane that she's taking to a different part of Texas today. We're, you know, we just got off planes from New Orleans. Mardi Gras is probably like the most unhygienic large group activity I can imagine human beings engaging in. So we just came from that to go to two conferences. My conference is, you know, 15,000 people, so it's not that significant, but her conference is just a work conference. But I think that, you know, I was listening to the governor of Oregon, and she was talking about like, yeah, we might open up like the emergency fund for some of these workers who are displaced by the expectations of capitalism and like literally could infect the entire state.
Yep. If
we like adhere to normal capitalistic protocol. So we'll try not to do that. But Oregon is like pretty, you know, is pretty up on these things compared to the average state. So, you know, like that ain't ever coming to West Virginia. I'll tell you that much. So, So I don't know, like, how many people have to die before capitalism is exposed? Like, it's not how I would like it to happen.
But this is so funny, Stuart, because it's exactly what I was just talking to you about this right. guy, Anand Giridhas, was talking about exactly these sorts of things.
Oh, yeah.
About how this is now up for discussion because of the nature of what's happened with, you know, progressive politics being talked about. And
right, exactly. You know, yeah.
So that's something. It's not worth death, but it's...
No, it's not. Kind of, it's not worth it. It doesn't make it worth it. But it's like, it's a fortuitous timing. If something like this had to happen, I'm glad that it's in the 2020 election cycle.
I totally agree. Yep.
To get that awareness going, because it feels like there could be a groundswell of momentum now.
I agree, which is the only reason, incidentally, which is the only reason that Trump gives any much of a damn about this either, because even through his astonishingly stupid, slow brain, he still, something has dawned on him that this is his Katrina, and it's his Katrina because it's not just going to affect Black people. And so therefore,
well, it's his Katrina if George Bush's entire platform had been the urban renewal of the city of New Orleans, right? So it's like, it actually has the potential to be way
even worse. That's true. That's Katrina. Oh yeah, yeah. Because, no, I meant for him just on the political level. That's all. You know, like.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm with you anyway. Sorry. Go on.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's all.
Can I make a case for the worst case scenario?
I'm shocked that
I would be. There. I was gonna say, why start now, Russ?
Okay.
Dr. Doom.
Here's Dr. Doom of sound mind. Yeah. I want to say personally.
Well, wait. When does Beverly Hills? Well, first of all, when does Hollywood collapse? Like in
right?
Are they the last to go or the first? I just want to.
Dying in Beverly Hills.
It's funny because my personal life is going so well right now. Like typically, you feel like people with these kind of doom and gloom mindsets and predictions like have personal problems that they are, you know, sublimating into their predictions about politics and things like that. But for me, it's like could not be more opposite. Thank you. Quiet, please.
Like, Daddy, stop talking about your personal life.
Sorry.
This is not.
Can't get it out. It's impossible. Anyway, I mean, things are going really well. I'm happy with work. You know, I'm like a commercial actor auditions. I'm good doing improv shows. Everything feels great. And then the world is doing this. So... I don't know where to start. I think a good place to start is, I feel like the comment that you made about, like, it feels like the mask is being ripped off of all of these things that we've been in denial about for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's the case on many levels, on the case of our health infrastructure or lack thereof. Bill Gates gave a great TED talk in 2015 about a theoretical pandemic that started in Hubei province in China that resembled SARS. And then he talked about how it would spread around the world and how our own infrastructure is not built and not prepared for it, not coordinated properly. And this was when we had a president who was like all over the Ebola epidemic and really handled it extraordinarily
exactly.
well.
Yep. Oh, and by the way, got annihilated for it by the Republicans who now think that the criticism of this president is a plot. You know.
Sure.
So, anyway, just pointing out. Deep state. Sure.
I mean, to your point, Greg, about the 95,000 ICU beds, we only have about, I think, is what I read, like about 1 million available hospital beds in the whole country.
Yeah, period.
And all of those, the hospital beds and the ICU beds are occupied about 80%, at 80% capacity at any given time.
Yep.
So, you know, yes, the low lethality, we can even assume that, like you said, it might be below 1% fatality because of the way that China has been kind of misreporting its own numbers. Like
correct.
If somebody tests positive, but they don't show any symptoms, they're not counted, which means that there are a lot of people who had it who were not counted because they want to keep the numbers artificially low. So, you know, assume that 40% of the American public catches this because there's no way we can contain it because we're in 2020 in an election cycle and there's multiple political revolutions going on with massive rallies in every major city in the country, not to mention the fact that in addition to the president, everyone else's priority seems to be the markets over human lives. And whatever business you are running takes precedence over whatever, you know, things that you could do to secure the health and safety of people. So people will work and businesses will run and conferences will happen and Disneyland will keep running and every possible.
Not the Louvre, though. The Louvre is closed. Let's just be clear about that.
Good job, Louvre.
Because the employees refuse to come in. They're like, we're not going to do it.
Because they have workers' rights in
France. They have workers' rights in France, yeah. Exactly.
That's exactly amazing. Airlines are not going to voluntarily shut themselves down. I mean, they did okay with restricting travel to a specific province of a specific country at the beginning of this, but they're not going to voluntarily wind down their operations because everybody is like leveraged in debt and they can't survive 6 months of not operating a business. Right. Nobody's prepared for this.
Right.
So the priorities and the incentives are all upside down. And in a time when the only priority has to be preserving human life. And that's just not going to happen. And if it does happen, it'll happen way, way, way too late. As is the case with the American response. So like, you know, Trump is touting himself for closing flights to China at a relatively early, I would argue could have done it earlier stage. But at the same time, I don't know how much you guys know about the testing snafu with the CDC.
They
sent out a faulty test that was recalled. And then they also refused to allow people to get tested who weren't specifically traveling from China. So if you had caught it from someone from the Iran outbreak or the Italy outbreak, or if you were traveling elsewhere, like, and you showed these kind of symptoms, they wouldn't even acknowledge you as a potential to be tested for this. And this is the test that could only be administered by mailing it to Atlanta to the CDC and then mailing it back. It's like, how's that for efficiency and trying to identify people who are sick? Mm-hmm. So like they have no chance. And the outbreak has been going on for however long it's been since our podcast, you know, 6 weeks, 4 weeks. And it's in every major city that has a major airport. And that's just the truth. That's the way it is. So some places higher numbers. The only reason that the numbers are as low as they are right now is because we've only tested a few hundred people across the country.
Right.
And South Korea has tested 200,000 people. We've tested less than 1,000 people. So we don't have any idea. And in fact,
that's not an accident, right? Because of the obsession with the market, right? Like the market, instead of going up 1,200 points on like, this will be an excuse for a rate cut, would have gone down another 1,200 points if we actually had an idea of the scale of magnitude.
Yeah, there you go.
What's going on in the U.S. So like that is not adjust your television. That is not
as further evidence of this. It was pointed out on either Reddit or Twitter today that the CDC was keeping records publicly available on how many people were tested in this matrix that they had up on the side of how many people are tested, how many are infected, etc. And then surreptitiously overnight they removed the line how many people have been tested, so now it's no longer publicly available on the CDC website.
I heard about that. Now it's just how many positive cases.
Because they don't want to acknowledge that they're screwing the pooch by not testing enough people.
But if you don't have a denominator number, then you can't do a fraction. Fine,
you can't be sick if we never found out about it.
So the fact that we're this early into it and there's already like an active cover-up happening is very bad sign. That's a very bad sign.
Yeah, I mean, like,
that's
part of
not
it,
good.
Yeah, I mean, part of it may just be sort of like, I mean, there is some generalized a lot of generalized incompetence, and then some of it I think is confusion. You know, a lot of the sort of and what you're talking about is what a lot of the virologists that I was watching tonight was, you know, basically echoed a lot of what you said. And he said one of the things that is, and this is an interesting thing, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about the fact that this has probably been circulating at least in certain areas like the Seattle area, the Kirkland area, in Washington State for like probably 6 weeks. And no one had any idea because of many of the things that you just brought up. But again, what that indicates is that this is not two things. Number one, they know that it's 6 weeks because when they checked the gene, you know, when they sort of sequenced it and looked back, you know, did all this sort of look back at the tracking, this is more or less the exact same virus that it was 6 weeks ago. So there's been extremely little mutation. And as somebody pointed out, they were like, oh, you know, we're lucky. And they were like, well, part of the reason that it hasn't mutated is why does it need to? Like, it's succeeding, you know, it's like, I'm having no problem infecting people. Like, well, why does it need to mutate? Like, you mutate when you're trying to get past barriers, right? To infection.
Well, that's also correlated to the long incubation time, right? Like,
true.
You mutate less if you can hide in plain sight.
That's true, too. Yes, exactly. Right. And so one of the things that they pointed out was that that's the first thing, is that there's, you know, no mutation. The second thing is that part of the reason this has been difficult is because there has not been a surge in what would have been assumed to be flu-related things, right? Like, people, before they knew this thing was a thing, would have gone into the hospital or gone to the emergency room with flu-like symptoms. And there has not been such a surge. And, you know, that sort of aspect of it indicates, again, that this is not this is not some overwhelmingly lethal thing. Still more lethal than the flu, still dangerous, but not, you know, you get an immensely keel over and die. And it does tend to affect mostly, have significant effects anyway, on those who are, you know, with comorbidities and who are immunocompromised and the elderly. In fact, it does not seem to have much effect on children, nearly as much, actually, in a sort of strange...
Yeah, that was really surprising.
So, that again, this is not at all to be Pollyanna. I agree with everything you've said, but one of the things that is so frustrating about all this is that these are all things that it would be really helpful to kind of take into account, learn, and have processed by competent people. Like, the only good thing out of the press conference today was the fact that for most of it, Pence shut up and it was mostly doctors talking. So that's one thing. I want doctors talking. I don't want Pence. I don't want Pence to be anywhere except doing a radio show in Upper Sheboygan. But I really don't want Pence doing anything when it comes to this. I want that entire administration to go away and leave and let the actual adults in the room talk about these things from that point of view. So that was the only good news. But, you know, just from oh God, the everything else about the, you know, it's everything about this guy just magnified, right? But the more we have doctors, the better. So I'm echoing everything you're saying. I guess the good news, such as there is that that the fatality rate has not been higher from many people who have been infected as a consequence. So, again,
yeah, I mean, also to mean be fair, be
like everything's great,
it,
you know.
From the cases that we've seen in other countries, it takes up 3 to 5 weeks to become a lethal thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's yes. In certain, I guess that's true. Although, that's for those who are going to be. I mean, we would at this point know, like, we would see the range of people that are like that, that are now, you know, dropping dead as a consequence. Like, so.
Well, I mean, we're just starting down that path. I mean, and yeah, there are some mitigating factors. For instance, that Wuhan, and potentially a few other cities that have been affected had really bad air pollution, which could compromise
people's pulmonary systems. Like 50% of Chinese men smoke. Yeah, that was the other thing.
There are heavy smokers in Italy and Iran. Really bad. Which, yeah, for some, like, not only is it bad because it's a pneumonial disease, but also the target of this virus are these ACE2 receptors, which apparently are way more expressed than available if you were an ex-smoker. And some weird
given
stuff
the pollution,
they said,
they
also if you're
anyway.
Asian, but that one has not been corroborated. So that's not a real thing so far.
And Russ, by the way, just one quick thing. I don't know if you saw this map. Did you guys see the pollution map over China and how it now is like, looks beautiful and clear because the factories haven't been running for like whatever it is, like a month.
Oh yeah.
And so it's like the Chinese air
was the only year in the last 20 yep. that carbon emissions went down and the temperature went down. It's not an accident.
Yep.
The economy
yep.
is killing us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then sorry, one other sort of morbid aspect of that temperature map. Early on, there was actually a spike in SO2, sulfur dioxide, coming out of Hubei province. And it is theorized that this is because the government was engaging in mass cremations to hide the death tolls of the older people that were dying in Hubei. And so they would just like whisk away these bodies in the middle of the night and send them to the crematorium, which was like firing 24/7. So there was this.
In my experience in the Republic of China, there are never surreptitious deaths, and no one ever is disposed of under the cover of nightfall.
But
this is a permanent character for
no, absolutely.
Like
this guy
credulous guy.
This is to me the like the fourth Mepper, really. Like honestly, can I just say, by the way, that I'd like you all to remember that 96% of the people who were polled in China were actually approved of Chinese policies. And as I was told, in the process of losing the greatest injustice round of all time, only slightly undercut by our round story with the same judge who was, you know, the second most unjust round of all time. Again, that was a good argument. The argument that polling in China shows that people support our response. So in my experience, polling is totally believable and the people love their government in China.
But to take the dark side of the argument that you're making about this kind of incompetence being unmasked, leading to, you know, progressive reforms down the line, I think that will be true. I think a bunch of things. I think the Democratic Party is is sounding its death knell right now, and I think it will be dead, and new things will come out of it that will be very positive in some time. But I think that
very well could happen. I don't think it's the definite or even necessarily the likely scenario, but it's definitely possible.
It's on the table.
It's definitely out there.
And yeah. I think that a possibility for the near term is that the master of spin and nonsense, the president, will, you know, he can blame Pence for sure, but he can also blame, he can blame anyone he wants. He can blame Bernie Sanders for drawing crowds that are too big and spreading the virus around. Like, who knows what's going to come out of this guy's mouth? Like,
right, exactly.
And he'll just say whatever. But the point is, Jordan Peterson, I kept thinking of this interview that he gave where he was talking about like the fundamental aspects of conservative versus liberal personalities and what comprise them. And he would describe one of the prime aspects of the conservative personality that likes things like closed borders is this extremely old ancestral idea that we have to keep ourselves clean because of disease outbreaks. So historically, very, very, very old historically, conservatives want to protect the borders, not allow in outsiders because of this possibility of a plague. And so the consequence of that is that in the midst of a plague, regardless of all the other stuff that's going on in an election, an electorate might side with the candidate who wants and has been advocating for closed borders, who's been advocating for outsiders being evil, who's, you know, it will happily quarantine cities if he feels like those are happen to be liberal cities that don't like him very much to begin with, and could turn it to, you know, he could declare martial law.
I was going to say, there's also the possibility of, well, it's not really a good time for people outside of their house.
Yeah,
that's going to happen, you guys. Man, that's going to happen.
I've heard
and
that.
And there will be a time, I promise, when this all calms down, that we will get out to
vote.
Yeah,
we'll get out to vote.
This is the timeline that we're on.
Yeah, I think you may be underestimating exactly how much people either despise or have tuned this guy out completely, like including in his own government.
You can tune him out, but when National Guard troops are blocking your street,
they're
so
just not.
Go
they're not going
to
do that.
Not much that you can do about
they're
it.
They're not going to do that because the states run the National Guard, and the National Guard has already essentially defied Trump in about three or four disaster situations. They're but not going to listen to him.
There's a difference between defying a president over a fabricated thing. If it's a real disaster, and there are really sick people everywhere and the hospitals are really overwhelmed, which they will be, and our supply chain is interrupted such that it's a little bit harder to get basic supplies,
right,
which it will be, it will be very easy for him to declare martial law, to delay elections, to totally stop whatever political, you know, convention type things are happening, and just punt and just go, well, We'll worry about that next year after this all clears up.
It's possible. I think it's extremely unlikely because the sort of, first of all, the setup for the election is far enough along that sort of declaring that would be extraordinarily difficult to manage given the sort of limited. I think part of this is, I think it needs to be recognized how astonishingly weak this guy is. You know, in many certain circumstances, I was watching something about this, about how sort of the bluster and the bravado is covering over the incredible political weakness that this person has also, and that he's basically propped up by, you know, a judiciary, which they are, well, I shouldn't say that, propped up by a one branch of government, and really out of that branch of government, about 4 to 5 senators is like really all it is. And then the judiciary, who he's desperately trying to pack as fast as he can. And the judiciary is still fairly balanced and maybe slightly in favor of the law. But, you know, give him another 4 years and, you know, more Supreme Court justices and more other, you know, then God knows. I mean, then all bets are off.
I have to say, but, like, in a very morbid way, I can't imagine a luckier turn of events for Donald Trump. Like, I don't think, like, this could make him look bad 10 years hence. You know, we could look back and say he mismanaged this and a million people died and there was chaos.
Boy, that's not my read. My read is that this it comes close to locking the election in the other direction to me. I just don't think there's time. I think this is a nightmare.
By the time we're supposed to be ramping up and having a national campaign, it'll just be peaking, and like it'll make everything impossible to be able to organize people.
His polls, his poll numbers have collapsed even further over the last few weeks. I don't see it. The only way to do that is to basically that. In fact, people said this is the one enemy that he can't bully or corruptly pardon others to get past. Like, because nature's not going to give a damn that you want to run things a certain way, and nature's not a part of your cult. I mean,
who knows? Like, maybe he'll get sick. So. Maybe Biden and Bernie will get sick, and that will change.
If you're Bernie,
how in the world do you avoid catching this? You're just going to massive rallies every day.
No, Russ, there's an answer. There's an answer. Revolution. I'm sorry.
Put him in a bubble. He has no chance.
Well, you know what I actually heard? Somebody was saying that maybe this is a benefit to Bloomberg because he's so distant from people anyway that he doesn't want to touch them. So his like plutocratic separation. It's like the Pope Mobile, right? Like you just hang out in the Pope Mobile all the time and like, you know.
No, I mean, that there's so many things that are reflection. But yes, investing, like with the recent dropouts, you know, like Amy Klobuchar dropped out tonight, Pete Buttigieg dropped out last night, and like the Democratic Party trying to coalesce around, you know, your choice of 77-year-old plus men who are frail and infirm is really not a good plan. Like, it's not a good plan without a pandemic, right? Like, it's just a farce with a pandemic. But it's like, even not in a pandemic, these guys have like just actuarially a 5% chance of dying every year. So like, I don't. And that's then you add the past health concerns or senility. Then you add you're doing the hardest job interview that the world has to offer. And then you add coronavirus. So I'm like, you know, which as Russ points out, is attracted to crowds, which, you know, is the whole point.
But wait a minute, though. If you're more okay, I agree with all of this. But yes. I mean, I understand that this is a concern. But don't you think if you're talking about old men in crowds, yes, are you more concerned about a MAGA crowd who believes that this is a hoax to begin with? Or are you more concerned about a non-MAGA crowd? Like all the things you guys are talking about goes double for a guy whose idea of exercise is how much he lifts the Big Macs before eating them, right?
I mean, the virus is going to discriminate between the two political ideologies.
I'm talking about overall health.
I mean,
I'm not saying that, but like, why is the Democrats like reasoning for everything this year is like, well, if you compare it to Trump, and I'm like, can't we have a slightly higher standard than like, well, yes, by comparison to Trump, like, you know, like we can't aim higher than just like, let's copy the playbook of Trump with slight tweaks.
Of course. The argument though, but see, the thing is, this is an election that people, that you want to be a referendum on him, because if it's a referendum on him, he loses. You want this to be a referendum on him. You don't want it to be a referendum on either, you know, Biden gaffes or socialism, or you don't want those things to be the issue.
You want the issue to be
Trump because people effing hate this guy.
And do you think the ticket of Biden and Klobuchar gets it done? Because
no, he's never going to pick Klobuchar. I'll tell you exactly who's going to pick. It's either going to be Kamala Harris or it would be Stacey Abrams. He's going to pick a woman of color, and he should. He's not going to pick Warren, as much as I would love him to do that, because it doesn't fit. And frankly, Warren, as I'm sure Story will agree with me, is probably not necessarily on the Biden train, you know, very much.
I mean, if offered, she should take it. Anyone
agreed.
Biden's offer, they'll probably be president by February.
Yeah, that's it.
if she wins,
she should take it. I agree. Yeah,
like,
but
just,
I don't think he will. I don't think he will, though. I think he would go for a woman of color.
The man is not going to last. Like,
I think it's a woman of color. I think he's looking at Kamala Harris or Stacey Abrams.
I just don't. I mean, this is a separate conversation, unrelated to the end of the world. This is just about the Democratic Party, which is kind of irrelevant at this point. Like, I think that if Bernie comes out, it goes into the convention with this large plurality of delegates, but not enough to be declared ultimately the candidate. And then they go into the back room and they go, "Here's your ticket. It's Kamala Harris is your candidate, or Biden Harris, or, you know, Bloomberg and
they're not going to do anything with Bloomberg at all.
Like any of those outcomes, yes, I think fundamentally breaks the Democratic Party forever. and AOC will start a new party, and it'll take 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
And it will be a different thing. And that's the end of the two-party system.
One of the first people carrying a card for that.
I think
100%. Like, I agree.
It'll be 10 people in the Bronx, but okay.
I mean, it's actually going to be. It's just like everyone who saw this happen in 2016, and now they're seeing an even more vicious version of it because the establishment is losing control slowly over the process, over the media, over the electorate. And they're like, why won't they just stop? What do they think? This is their vote matters that they can just do whatever they want. Stop them. Someone stop them. And so this is like,
this is a drinking game. I'd be drunk with hearing establishment.
My take on this, by the way, is that Buttigieg was given concessions. Like, they promised him something to drop out when he did. Klobuchar was given concessions. They promised her something to drop out when she did. Warren was given concessions to stay in, so that she could siphon votes away from Bernie, and she took it because she's going to get a post. She's going to get a cushy post, if not a VP ticket. She'll get a cushy post somewhere for staying in and making sure that the progressive votes are split.
But wait, can we bump the brakes on this just a little bit? It is possible, first of all, that some of them, including Warren, may think that she has the best plans and wants to actually present the
plans. Sure, she has plans, but she has no political path to the nomination, and her stated verbatim plan is to get as many delegates as she can and then use them as a negotiating tool in the convention. That means she knows that she has zero path to earning the nomination by winning
again
states.
No, that's not gonna win any states. That's not what that means.
Not gonna win any
states. I agree with most of what you're saying. Again, Warren's path, as would have been Pete's, as would have been Amy's, is everyone you're running against is a 77-year-old man who is frail and senile, and there's coronavirus. Like, the idea that you could even count on these people being, like, functional, like, they don't have to die. They could just, like, fall apart physically and still be alive, right? Like, this race has been incredibly fluid, and I just think it's a little, like, I know there's been a ton of fatalism in the last 72 hours about what's definitely going to happen, but I'm like, I don't think there's any definite going to happen. Like, Bloomberg was definitely going to be a finalist a week ago. Yeah. Biden was definitely going to drop out.
I agree with what you're saying, Story, but none of that explains why the 38-year-old charismatic speaker with way more delegates higher than Warren dropped out. He dropped out because he was told to drop out by party mandarins who go, you'll get your chance. We're going to give you such
and such. Everything
except put you on the ticket. You need to drop out to consolidate the moderate vote because Bernie is an existential threat to our party, and that's what they did.
But you realize, right, that this is politics is partially literally negotiating with people, right? And that 100%. if Bernie wants to do anything, if he's elected president, this is exactly what 100%. He's going to have to
do. And to be fair, Republican senator for 30 years has said that Bernie is like the most reasonable person out of their party that they've been dealing with. He's passed hundreds of amendments that have been bipartisan. Like, that's not a problem for Bernie. What I'm saying is that the party would rather have Trump than Bernie. That's the point. They would rather lose to Trump than win with Bernie. Trump makes the political consultancy class tons of money and prestige.
That's not
they
the
write
same
books,
thing as the establishment.
They go on TV. They profit off of having this clown as the president. If Bernie were president, he would expose them for what they are, which is phony baloney liberals who believe in nothing but their own pocketbooks. And if they have to put an intersectional looking face on a candidate who still believes in all of their klepto corporatist policies, that's they're more than happy to do
Greg,
that.
But what is
what you
what
can't
is
do
case?
Is cut into their pocketbook
it's just not,
ever.
Just
Greg,
so
Greg,
not
what is
true
your case? What is your case that the Democratic Party prefers Bernie Sanders to Donald Trump? Because I think that's a salient point, but I'm not totally sold on that. So I want to hear what your response is.
I just want to say is one thing that's very clear to me is I think that Bernie Sanders supporters tend to believe that the fear, and I'm not sure saying, I don't know whether I think the fear is reasonable or not. I have very serious doubts about Bernie's ability to change his personality such that he actually can win. And the constant establishment drinking game that he's been playing for a while is not giving me reason for optimism, but you know, leave that aside. The reality is that the fear is not that he's going to win, it's that he's going to lose. And that the re-election of this fascist is an existential threat to the country and indeed the world.
He polls and better than any other candidate. What are you talking about?
Yes, he polls better than him with literally zero Republican oppo research that's been done, which is why every time Bernie has something quote unquote happen to him, the first person to tweet about how he's being poorly used is Donald Trump, who desperately wants Bernie to be the candidate he runs against. And so there's got to be a reason why every Republican consultant is salivating at the prospect of wanting to face Bernie. And it's not because they think, oh, you know,
Hillary Clinton was salivating at the prospect to face Trump.
And she beat him, and she beat him by 3 million popular votes and was undone by a combination of a moron at the head of the FBI and Russian elections and people who decided it was a better idea to throw away votes on Jill Stein's of the world rather than doing it for Hillary Clinton.
DNC crafted a policy where they gave billions of free television hours to coverage of candidate Trump because they thought he was such a clown show that they decided
how did the DNC
was a WikiLeaks document. It was leaked out of the Podesta emails.
Yes,
so it's true.
Clearly.
Greg, are you saying that those emails that are leaked are fabricated? None of them were fabricated. They were true. The strategy was give Donald Trump airtime. This is from the Clinton campaign and Podesta and the DNC. Give him as much airtime as you want. Let the Republican Party be seen as the party of Donald Trump. So they gave CNN would show the camera of the empty podium waiting for Trump to talk for hours and hours and hours. They iced out all of the other more moderate Republican candidates. And eventually it became a snowball that nobody could stop. And it backfired historically hilariously on the Clinton campaign. Nobody in this class knows who's going to win. Nobody understands the politics behind why Donald Trump get elected. They think that they're all deplorables and racists, but they're not. They're people who find their lives extremely hard, find that they have no benefits, that they have no health care, that they have no means of buying a house, that they have nothing but opiates and TV, and they want to destroy the political elites and the people who've created the system. And Trump was the only vehicle. Trump was the only vehicle to do that.
By electing,
and he was a destructive vehicle that was a fake populist. Bernie's a real populist who provides New Deal. A New Deal Democratic point of view. He's the FDR of this generation, and he's for real. And people know that, and Republicans who don't like Trump, who've soured on Trump, would vote for Bernie. Independents who've soured on Trump would vote for Bernie. He would crush Trump. The Democratic Party would sooner commit Harry Caray than allowing it to happen.
This is just like... all right. We're obviously not going to arrange. We're not.
They fundamentally will. We're going to watch that play out where the Democratic Party shoots itself in the head to prevent a Bernie Sanders candidacy, and they'll be successful.
They can stop it.
He can't get enough delegates to force their hand. So they will choose the ticket, and they will lose.
I just hope that in the process,
the progressive will leave, and this is the timeline that we're on.
Okay. I just hope that in the process of this, you know, reality that you see coming true, I hope that during the time that we talk about establishment, we can talk a little bit about Bernie's complete incapability of getting a group of people that are known as, you might have heard of them, African Americans, also known as the base of the party, to support him, which is why he loses in South Carolina, not by 2 points.
He loses in South Carolina because he's a Jew,
Greg. By 40
points. He loses in South Carolina. Nobody in the South will vote for a Jewish candidate.
So in other words, it's wrong to say that Trump voters are hugely racist and that's the reason that they did, which, by the way, is the reason because you're dealing with racists. That's wrong, though. But it isn't wrong to claim that the reason that African Americans who have actually seen
Joe Biden...
No, I didn't
say African Americans.
Let me finish.
I'm just saying in the Deep South. He'll win African Americans everywhere else. He polls second in African Americans to Joe Biden.
Okay, well,
let's
see where that happens, because according to what looks like Super Tuesday, that's not how it's going to go down. And there's a reason.
He's the leading candidate amongst
the same
Latinos.
Problem.
He's the leading candidate amongst Latinos, and he's the second leading candidate amongst African Americans. He has the most diverse base of any of the candidates that are remaining.
What happened in South Carolina would disagree with you. And it suggests, remember, he didn't just lose, lost by 40 points. So I think there's a reality here that is someone is able to build a diverse coalition. Now, I like Biden more than you guys do, but I am the last person to claim that this is my first choice. Like Story, I would like to see Elizabeth Warren win because I think Warren combines a bunch of stuff. I'm extremely impressed with her. I'm extremely impressed with the way that she you know, his actual competence married with passion and interest and intelligence and blah, 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 blah. I am more than happy to do that. That's who I am hoping for. And if my vote in New York ever actually matters ever, we actually ever get a primary that matters, I will vote for her. So I am 100% on board that train. That said though, and again, if Sanders is the nominee, I will.
He won't be the nominee.
I will absolutely vote for
him. I've supported him for 20 years, and I'm telling you that there's zero chance that he'll be the nominee.
All right. Well,
I don't agree with that either.
Zero. I think that's completely wrong that he won't. That you think he's absolutely
zero chance. They will not allow it. It will not. They'll do.
Russ, you've got to get over this.
They would kill him rather than allow him to be the nominee. This look, when you are a candidate,
when
you're a candidate and you're criticizing the military industrial complex constantly, these are people who assassinate people all over the world.
This is not
compunction.
We're not going here. This idea that he's going to be assassinated is actually a dangerous statement and is utterly, utterly wrong. This idea that this establishment that I keep hearing from him and from, and this comes from him, this is his language, the idea that the establishment, that he's running against both of them. If you want the Democratic Party's support, if you want the Democratic Party's nomination, if you want the Democratic Party's assistance, which is what you have in a two-party system, then it would behoove you not to spend your entire time coming up with, I'm talking about Bernie now, coming up with these conspiracy theories that eventually lead people to think that you would actually find him assassinated by the Democrats. This is
Can I ask a question? Absurdity. When did Bill Kristol become like a major Democratic endorser? Because that happened. He endorsed
I saw
Biden.
That. I
and
saw
I was like,
that. Because
Bill Kristol? The but he's project a never, for a new American
he's a never,
century?
He's a never
Bill
Trumper Kristol? Who hates Trump, you know?
Democratic Party. The centrist party fundamentally is it's the pro-war, pro-business, pro-corporatist, low taxes, private, you know, insurance for healthcare that's extremely expensive. This is what
straight
the Democratic Party advocates
for
now.
Yeah, man, you got to go work for the campaign. You're straight out of Bernie casting.
But what am I saying that's not true?
I mean, all of it. Like, it's just the idea that they're pro-centrist, pro-war. This is absurd. Like. None of what you said is borne out in the reality beyond the daily causes of the world. And like, I mean, as far as this part,
the reality is that every single Democratic statesperson, congressman or senator spends more of their time in that phone bank in DC where they have to constantly fundraise because that's just a part of what our political system is now, that they just call up donors. And the donors are the people who set the policy. The insurance companies write the legislation. The car companies write the legislation. This is what lobbyists do. So when you have a candidate who comes in and threatens that entire infrastructure and says, that's not going to be the way we do things anymore. We're actually going to have direct democracy. All of the people who are currently in power, lobbyists, insurance companies, car companies, the big banks who have an immense amount of money and reach and control staffers and control lobbyists, like they will do whatever they have. This is part of the reason that Bloomberg is spending so much money is to make sure that Bernie doesn't win. It has less to do with Trump than has to do with Bernie. If Bernie becomes the candidate, Bloomberg will lose tens of billions of dollars from his personal wealth. So it makes sense for Bloomberg to spend $2 billion on a primary campaign where he can run ads against Bernie because it's less expensive to do that than it is to live under a Sanders presidency.
So to be clear, if people were to vote more for Bloomberg than Sanders, that would be they would get over the fact that he's a Jew because he's a billionaire Jew. So they like billionaire Jews under your logic better than regular Jews.
Under my logic, Bloomberg will get killed in the South the same way that Sanders would get killed in the South, regardless of what policies there and their policy goals are very different. Obviously, neither one of them will pull well in the South, and show me that I'm wrong about that.
Oh no, I agree with you that they're not going to pull in the South. I just think your vision as to why
because New York Jewish candidates that does not pull well in the South.
That doesn't have anything. That has nothing. I just don't know if you realize how incredibly offensive it is to make the argument that the African American community that voted against your guy did it because he's Jewish. Like that is racial politics at an incredible scale.
I didn't say they did it because he's Jewish. It's not partially, obviously, Biden is closely associated with the Obama administration, which was hugely popular down there. But I'm saying that the profile of black voters is going to be very different in Chicago than it is in Mississippi.
I guess that's probably, I mean, I guess we'll find out. I mean, I guess Super Tuesday will resolve some of these issues and we'll see whether or not he's able to extend African-American support and whether he can actually go to the most important constituency of the Democratic Party.
Are you familiar with Nina Turner?
Who's like I'm all too familiar with Nina Turner.
Nina Turner and Chuck D. And
I know, and what's his name?
Killer Mike.
Cornel West, the four that he runs out all the time to be like, here's the four that
have. They're doing great work, and he'll get a huge plurality. I mean, obviously, way more African American voters than Warren or Buttigieg or Klobuchar, any of them. So,
what can you say
about that? He'll get the most diverse backing, other than Biden, who polls well in African Americans, but Latinos will swing toward Bernie. But it doesn't matter. None of this matters. I'm sorry that we got into this political argument because it's going to be the moodest political argument of all time because ain't none of it going to happen.
I mean,
Bernie's not going to be allowed to be. He can go in there. If he doesn't reach the threshold, doesn't matter how many more delegates he has than everybody else. They're going to stomp him out. And they can't.
I agree with Russ entirely, except on two points. I don't think that Warren was bribed into staying in. I think she legitimately thinks that she has good reason to stay in. For the same reason, I might add, that Bernie stayed in after Hillary had clinched the delegate majority, which was that she was still facing the possibility of being indicted. And if Bernie had dropped out and seated his delegates and then Hillary had been indicted, they would have brought in Biden to be the nominee instead of Bernie, who would have earned it. So that was why he stayed in, and he dropped out like the day after they announced that she was no longer under investigation. And it was like, okay, that's a reasonable reason to stay in. Again, I think Warren has a legitimate path to stay in until the convention because all of these men are extremely vulnerable health-wise. So I think that's fair. So I agree with Russ on everything except that, and that it is a foregone conclusion that Bernie will be denied the convention. I still think there is a possibility that if Bernie is on 48% or something of the delegates, that they will recognize what a catastrophic 1968 replay it would be to take the nomination away from him, and that they will there will actually be enough of the party that cares more about beating Trump than beating Bernie that they will get involved. But
the only encouraging thing that I've seen, and I don't know if it's a bellwether of anything or if it's just a one-off, is the fact that apparently Bernie and other supporters had a conversation with the higher-ups at MSNBC, who had been like extraordinarily negative disproportionately in their coverage of him, to the point where Chris Matthews is who just retired today, apparently. Yeah.
Well, that's because he's going to get hit with lawsuits for
sexual harassment stuff. But yeah, like that in part that he was comparing the rise of the Sanders campaign to like the Nazis advancing.
Yeah, it was terrible. As you know, Matthews has been a joke for years though, but yes.
Like talking about how, you know, he's going to enslave all of us in a communist state or whatever. And like multiple commentators who are older were saying things like that. And like, yeah, I get it. That's totally going to be. And again, Bernie's not going to be the candidate. If there were a national campaign, that would be the line of the Republicans. They wouldn't talk about policy. They wouldn't talk about specifics. They would just say the word communism 100,000 times and talk about Red China and just like say crazy stuff. And, you know, that's their right to do that. But I was encouraged that apparently MSNBC, in addition to retiring Matthews, did try to look to find in its stable some more progressive voices that could actually be on TV once in a while. And they seem to acknowledge that they're way, way behind in terms of what the under 40 demographic actually looks like and what they support policy-wise and how that was reflected 0% in MSNBC's coverage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that. It was the Chris Matthews thing was fascinating. I don't know if you saw that somebody tweeted out something the effect of, I really want to have time to feel bad that Chris Matthews left, but everyone keeps interrupting me. <I'm> just like, because he has to be the worst interviewer I've ever seen. Like, really, I've seen a lot of bad interviewers. I never saw anyone so bad. The only time that Matthews was ever even vaguely okay is there was this one little small narrow lane where he could get pissed off about certain blue collar, white, always white, working class voters in like Scranton, right? And he could occasionally get pissed off about like things with that. And then he could actually present a pretty awesome rant, but it was like, it's not worth the one every decade of those that you get for all of the garbage that he is the rest of the time. So I was just kind of like, yeah, whatever. I mean, definitely the worst ones. I mean, I don't remember if Carville is on that, or I think Carville is on MSNBC also.
I don't know
if it's that or not. But that's the problem, is that if you have, like, you know, Carville and you know, Chris Matthews, those are definitely, I'll fully admit, like, not, you know, yeah, pro.
Can we get rid of Bill Maher too while we're at it?
Oh yeah, Bill Maher is a nightmare. Also,
Lord. Bill Maher says some cogent things once in a while. Like,
yeah, but then he mixes it up with a bunch of, you know, anti-Islamophobe bullshit. Yeah,
Oh my god,
I can't stand Maher. Maher is the example of the guy of the liberal who wants to be smarter than you at all times and is not nearly as smart as he thinks he is. Like, I ate guys like this for breakfast at NYU in debate. Like, they were all the same thing. They had the same arguments. They never grew up out of them, and they were intellectually bankrupt, just like him. Like,
well, he's a comedian first and, like, a politico second, you know?
He plays his casual take on it, though. You know what I mean? Like, you could argue that John Oliver's like that, but John Oliver is, you know, way smarter, frankly.
He's more cerebral, for sure.
And he gives a damn, whereas Maher is just kind of like, haha, more rhetorical grenades. Look at this. I'm going to give a platform to, you know, like,
I was very surprised in the last John Oliver that we saw that he was giving, like, a full-throated endorsement of Medicare for All. Like, I was surprised because I had pictured, like, obviously Oliver's very smart and funny, but I pictured him as, like, very moderate in terms of his political standing. So I was surprised to hear him advocating for that.
Well, I mean, originally, but he's British, right? So they, you know, their whole big thing is, right, how dare you even privatize anything at all. Like, I mean, you know, that was the system. That's one thing that, like, as more of this has come out about how incredibly problematic the healthcare system is and how much the narrative has been set by people. Again, it's always the same problem in America. The same problem is always the obsession with choice and the argument that what we need is choice and don't let them take away your choice. When what this really is about is, no one really likes insurance companies. They just don't like feeling as if they've lost their choice. And so, like kids, they get played by people being like, do you want to take away that? Do you want your choice taken away? And so it means your choice to have to sit around and have caps and, like, you know, deductibles and incredible amounts of confusion and chaos, which makes it difficult and means that people don't get preventive care, people don't get what they should get. And so you have the specter of the richest country in the world that engages in what I think is criminal activity of not treating people in its society. And those people, incidentally, are all of us. Those people are not just the poorest of the poor, it's everybody. And the only ones who get out are the Cadillac plan billionaire types, the Mike Bloombergs of the world, which is why the Democrats can't nominate him, because, you know, you want to talk about an existential threat. Yeah. That's what an existential threat is if you nominate a billionaire.
Like, how is he a credible candidate for a set? Like, I get that he was mayor of New York, but that he could come in and spend, whatever, $500 million and be placed on a debate stage after not even participating in the first few states.
Well, you know,
just show up and everyone's like, this is fine.
Does, well,
like,
I will say this,
not
though,
show what the corruption really exists.
Well, but here's the thing, though. I think there's a misread, though, about this in the corruption, because what that actually did, and I think it was a good idea to do this, they put him onto a debate stage, largely because once you put them on a debate stage, you get to see what the ideas are actually like on the ground. And then you watch as Elizabeth Warren decapitates him and hands him his own spine on stage, which is exactly, by the way, what she would do to Trump. He is a stand-in for Trump. He is exactly like him. He's from New York. He's a plutocrat. He's arrogant as all hell. The only difference between the two of them is that he has somewhat better policies because he's not demented, insane, and, you know, everything
else.
But
he's also a lot more polite. He's more polite.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he's still a sexual harasser. He's still, I mean, all the things that Trump is, he's just better, and he actually does have some things that he cares about.
I agree with you on all of that, except that he's better. He's the same guy.
Well, he is. No, he is better. He is better. He's not the exact same guy, because Trump would never put billions of dollars into gun control. So, I mean, he is better, and I've seen that happen on the ground. So
I mean, you could probably trade gun control for militarism, right? Like, they die at home less and they die abroad.
I mean, we'll see what happens if he ever got to that moment. But the reality is that he's made enormous strides on gun control. And I know that from local activists on the ground. But
I think
that
the biggest difference between the
two, is their
tolerance for soda. Like, Trump will let you drink all the soda that you right. want. And there Bloomberg will ban your soda.
Either way, though, the point is, I'm glad that he was eliminated. And that's kind of one of the frustrating things is, like, and the person who eliminated him is the person who would do the same thing to Trump. Like,
absolutely.
I think Warren would win in a walk. That I think would be clear. She would win in a walk. I'm not convinced that Sanders has the same kind of profile for a lot of reasons, but at the very least, I mean, like, you know, it was a pleasure to watch someone, especially with debate backgrounds like us. Mm-hmm. It was a pleasure to watch someone annihilate that smug piece of garbage and watch as he was just humiliated on stage, and humiliated along the exact axis that was the reason he was there in the first place, which is he's a rich guy, and she annihilated him. And I think, like, she would have done the same thing.
100% agree. Although, what if he could just get completely destroyed in that debate and then spend another $500 million on ads? And most people don't watch the debate. They just
see but they don't,
regular TV, and
out,
Mike Bloomberg shows up every 10 seconds. And you slowly get hypnotized into saying, hey, Mike can get it done. You know?
His polls, though, but see, his poll numbers have sunk, though, since that debate. Like, he, and I think the reason is there is a limit to what money can do, because there is a point where literally people just don't hear you anymore. And there is a point where that's the case with him. Like, money is necessary, but not sufficient. And I think the problem is that Bloomberg does not sell well at all. He doesn't even sell well along the traditional, albeit stupid, American axes of, I want to be able to have a beer with this guy. Can you imagine having a beer with him?
He has zero charisma.
He has no charisma.
You have to have that to be a president.
Exactly. Like, he has no, you know, he doesn't even have, like, stupid charisma. Like, Trump. He has nothing. So he just has tons of money. So there's limits to that. You know, and I just, it was funny to me to sort of see people being like, well, you know, this is the way the lane would have operated if he had done this and done this. I think everyone was done a favor by having him on the debate stage, so people could be like, well, that was a dumb idea. And then, like, you know, everybody sort of consolidated back with Biden as the sort of moderate alternative. I mean, you know, we'll see. I think if Warren tomorrow during Super Tuesday, I think if Warren, you know, doesn't get a win somewhere or doesn't get delegates somewhere, if she comes out with, like, mostly fourth and fifth place finishes, I think it starts to get hard for people to stick with her financially and otherwise. I want her to stay in, but I don't see how that happens. But I think if she does, you know, better in California than people expect, I think if she, you know, does reasonably well in a lot of the other states, if she comes out as a credible third alternative, then I'm 100% with Story. Then at that point, she ought to stay in, because you're dealing with Bernie, you got a guy with a heart attack, you know, history, recent heart attack history within the last few months. You're dealing with Biden, who, of course, is, I think, just 1 year shy of Bernie in terms of age. He's like 77 or whatever the case may be. I don't remember exactly. And you have the coronavirus thing. So I completely agree with Story. But if she gets blown
and Biden, like, to be fair, is having real trouble stringing multiple sentences.
Yeah, but that's because he has, like, a stutter, though. I don't.
That is not because of the stutter.
No,
the stutter,
I saw a clip of him trying to recite, like, the preamble to the Declaration of Independence or something.
He's never
like that.
Been.
He
he's
literally
never been a great
just,
public speaker,
he,
though.
He had some kind of thing happened where he was just like, "We the people of you know how it goes." And I was like, "What just happened?"
I don't know. I think that's I'm not concerned about that. I think that and I also think that stuff is all baked in, which is one of his advantages, whether you like him or not. Is the
oh
fact
my
that
God, the baked in argument. Remember when it was all baked in for Hillary Clinton?
It was. And then so she went and she won by 3 million votes. And then she got taken out by a Russian.
I mean,
plot
at some point, though,
no
Hillary
one
Clinton
saw
not keep being the model for success, right? Like, it cannot just be like, is it going to be 2048 after we've lost like 12 straight elections? Like, when will that no longer be the model for?
Well, when we honestly come up with the right reasons that we lost, and it's not because the woman happened to do a bad job. I mean, like that, because that's the argument that's been made too many times about why she lost. And she didn't lose the election because she ran an incompetent campaign. She lost the election because she won the election by 3 million votes. She lost the election for a combination of factors, including a 25-year history of people trying to assassinate her character in the media and a 25-year history of people hating her, which is deliberate on the part of the Republicans.
Oh, I know.
And all these other things.
I completely agree with that. But that should have been recognized as, it's not fair, right? It should have been recognized as a vulnerability and not an asset.
Maybe.
Similarly, like Bernie currently has a vulnerability that is also not fair, that people blame him for Hillary Clinton losing the election. It's not true and it's not fair, but it's a factor in why a lot of mainline Democrats will not vote for him. And it is a reason that he is, I think, not as good a general election candidate as Elizabeth Warren.
And so, I think a lot of those same characters will publicly complain about Trump and privately look at their bank account and go, well, I'd rather have Trump than Bernie because Trump keeps my taxes low. And that will secretly make the decision for a lot of people.
Well, I think everyone knows where our positions are. So we've made clear what we think, and people can decide what they like. But
can I also say sure. Before you go into wrap up,
sure.
That I donated money to three candidates, one of whom is left. You're going to hate all of them. I mean, you already do. The three candidates that Tulsi Gabbard, Andrew Yang, Bernie Sanders.
Yep, those are my three lists.
Tulsi Gabbard is still left. Did she drop out?
Why? No, she's still in polling at 0.0000.
She's in it. She's like suing Hillary Clinton for $50 million for defamation of character.
I also donated to Tulsi Gabbard, for what it's worth. I have donated to both Warren and Gabbard.
I think that if
did she got donated in rubles, I want to make sure.
I think if she weren't character assassinated by the DNC, and let's remember,
let's remember that
she was the darling of the DNC.
Oh my God,
Greg, she was the vice chair of the DNC.
Hurry up and finish what you're going to say so we can do this wrap before we go into more of this nonsense.
Tulsi Gabbard was the vice chair of the DNC.
I know what she was.
She was on track to be the next whatever it girl, but she decided to run with Bernie because she thought that he was, you know, more fundamental to the values that she held or whatever. And he was also the only candidate that would talk about the endless militarism, which was her main issue, being somebody who served in the army, saw the, you know, horrors of war and decided that we shouldn't go on this military adventurism. Sure. Still on the stage, other than Bernie a little bit, but she was the only candidate standing up and going, maybe we shouldn't be going to war everywhere in the world. And this is in the Democratic Party. She was the only candidate saying that. So, of course, she was character assassinated. Hillary implied that Russia loves her, which, by the way,
which it does.
Even Hillary Clinton backtracked on, A, because she's getting sued, and B, because
she's worried about a lawsuit.
She knows that there was never any actual, like, collusion or discussion with Russian agents. She just said that Russia would support her candidacy because Russia would like it if there were a mainline candidate.
And she's right.
Didn't want to have an antagonistic military agenda toward other countries because that would be in Russia's
specifically advantage. Russia.
Sure, but every country would love that. Yemen would love that too. Yemen would love it if we didn't have a military.
So would Syria. And Tulsi made clear what she thinks about Syria as she's a friend of, definitely a fan of Assad. So
I can't, like, I just can't with this stuff. Like she would be, if you want a person of color who's a woman and you checks all of your intersectional boxes, like she's your candidate. But again, because she opposed the forces that run the party, she was not allowed to compete. And that is what's going to happen to Bernie.
Anything else you want to say before wrap?
And Yang Gang, I don't even know what to say about him.
he is a great, I will say this about Andrew Yang. He is a great political commentator.
Yeah, he is. He's good at that. Yeah.
But I have really been enjoying
I agree.
Andrew Yang. Political commentary, like replace Chris Matthews, give him Chris Matthews.
Go. Agree, totally.
I think the reason that I liked him and donated to him was he had the most cogent analysis of our modern economy and like what to do about it, and nobody else was even talking about. You know, Trump talks about Mexicans, but they're stealing jobs, but the real issue is automation, and nobody's talking about automation except for Andrew Yang. So I appreciated him for being more sophisticated on that level.
Yeah. No, I also appreciated him because he also understood basic aspects of math. And so was like, and I love the fact that he was like, yeah, I just did the math and I can't win. So.
All right. I have a wrap up comment to try to say one thing about the conversation that we've had tonight. I think while this was not always the most exciting, most humorous or most comfortable conversation that we've ever had on the Met Report, in my experience, in reality, I do think that this was good that we had this discussion because I think this is a microcosm of discussions that are happening all over America between people loosely affiliated with the Democratic Party and other people loosely affiliated with the Democratic Party. So I think that our audience will find resonance, even if they don't agree one way or the other with either, you know, with any of the three of us in whole or in part. I think this is the kind of conversation that we're going to see more of going
forward. Sure. I can get behind that. Sure. Yeah. Totally agree. And if you want to know more about all of these things, you should definitely check us out at themepreport.com. You should give us feedback. You should let us know about all the different ways to get to us. Apparently, we have a TikTok. We didn't know this, but apparently we have a
apparently it only gives you 1 minute bite-sized MepReport portion.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like, a full thing.
It's the notion of what the MepReport actually does. I was unaware, but I'm very pleased now that we have gotten to be the coolest of the cool with TikTok.
I doubt this will happen, but should this be our last podcast for a little while, I would advise everyone to stock up on basic necessities that you could live on for 2 weeks without
not
having
to mask.
And if
please.
You're sequestered alone for, say, 163 hours, may I suggest what you can do?
TheMepReport.com.
We have 163 episodes. Some of them
great listening.
An hour.
Or if you find yourself in a quarantine, an involuntary quarantine.
Right. Exactly. This will be a good way to do it. And you can see whether everything we said came to pass in the way that we said it, one of us somehow, and all that kind of good stuff. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. Hopefully not goodbye, everybody.
No, not goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. Not goodbye till later. Soon. Very soon. Very soon. Very soon.
Well, the last time I saw old man Emu, he was chasing a female he knew, as he shot past, I heard him say, she can't fly, but I'm telling you, she can run the pits of a kangaroo. She can't fly, but I'm telling you, she can run the pits of a kangaroo. Well, there is a moral to this ditty, ba-da-da-da-da-da. Thrush can sing, but he ain't pretty, ba-da-da-da-da-da. Duck can swim, but he can't sing, nor can the eagle on the wing. Emu can't fly, but I'm telling you, he can round the fence of a kangaroo. Well, the kookaburra laughed, and he said, it's true, ba-da-da-da-da-da.